Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Now, welcome along to a Friday edition of the Huddle Breakdown. Enda, James and Alan with you here as we look ahead to this weekend's game against Motherwell on Sunday. It is the first game in I don't know how long. I don't need to keep repeating myself, but it is the first time in a long time that Celtic are starting a weekend not top of the table. So work to be done this weekend, guys. How are we?
All right.
Good for a Friday morning. You guys getting me up this freaking early to record, I tell you. The sacrifices I make.
Well, it's lunchtime here, Jim, so it's late with us, you know, so it's...
That's all right.
Yeah.
I haven't even had time to put my makeup on yet.
And that's the most important aspect. I'll just have to do a lot of editing to the video and post to make it look nice and pretty. Look, it's a big weekend for Celtic, but there was bigger news, I guess, in the world of Celtic this week before we get into the preview of the game, and that's that Joe Hart is going to be retiring at the end of this season. I would say that most fans would have said that they would have liked Joe Hart to be replaced at the end of this season anyway. Plenty of people would have said they would have liked to see him replaced before this season, but we'll pick that apart and the merits of that as well. But in terms of this news, Alan, it's probably expected, but I thought what was interesting was Joe Hart's words himself, in that he almost felt like it was pressure from the fans that he didn't really want to almost let down with his performances. It almost seemed like he knew himself, the fans wanted him to be replaced, and to end any speculation of that, like a new goalkeeper not coming into the squad at the end of the season, he's sort of putting it to bed immediately.
Well, I mean, like any top athlete and one that's been historically as successful as Joe Hart, you never want to quit, right? So you never want to call it a day, and you always think you've got another season in you. And he may well do somewhere. But I think it's a wise decision. I think he's quitting before he really kind of goes over any sort of form cliff. I mean, we've been speaking ever since he came in the door, really, about, first of all, his suitableness for, firstly, playing under Ange Postecoglou, where there's a high demand to be a sort of sweeper keeper, and also to... you know, to be very effective with the ball at feet, but also really because you're filling the team with ball players and not necessarily prioritising, you know, massive height. You really want a goalkeeper that's going to be pretty agile and decisive aerially, because you're going to expect them to take a lot of crosses and long catches and that sort of thing. None of those things really seem to be Hart's strong suit. However, you know, in terms of, you know, a bit of a retrospective over what will be three seasons, is that he started off pretty much being what I would call a really solid goalkeeper. He pretty much made the saves that you would expect. I mean, towards the end of Craig Gordon's time, even he was a little bit erratic, actually, in terms of, if you look at sort of key metrics like goals saved compared to XG, and then the stats bomb one, goals saved above average. Hart has just been bubbling just up or below those metrics, which is decent. I mean, it's basically saying, which is what I've always said about, he essentially saves nearly all the shots you'd expect him to do, but he struggles with the ones that are kind of outside his declining range of agility. And if you look at his overall save percentage, which I know it's not the killer stat that Sky Sports think it is, but he does have the lowest, his save percentages are consistently in the 60s in these three seasons. It's actually 68% this season, which is his highest. But, you know, Forster was 76%. Bain in the 18-19 season was 84%. Gordon in his good years was between sort of mid-70s, mid-80s%. So what that tells me, as I say, is he just isn't getting to the ones that are difficult to get to. And we saw that. And I think, it cost us materially in the Champions League in that sense. And again, if you look at his... what StatsBomb called the positioning error rate, he's improved a little bit actually in the last couple of weeks. He was the bottom of all the SPL goalkeepers by positioning error, which is really a measure of how on average how many, I think it must be centimeters, he's away from the perfect position on each shot. And he's improved a little bit, to be fair to him. So I think overall there's a clear case that of decline. His error rate is going up as well. And another really fascinating feature about him is how rarely when he saves the ball, he actually catches it. So I capture what a goalkeeper does with a ball in terms of, do they parry it? Do they save it with their foot? Do they catch it? Do they tip it up in the air? I capture all of that. And he is consistently, apart from Barkas, bless him, he's consistently the lowest of the goalkeepers we've had going back to 2014-15, who actually catches the ball in saving it. He generally parries it, which can be okay as long as you get distance on it and you parry it away from goal, but can be a concern as well. That's something that was kind of declining. So all things considered, I think it's a wise decision. I think he will be remembered very fondly for lots of non-measurable attributes, just being a decent guy, being a great pro, being someone who's a real benefit around the squad and as a senior member of that squad. And I think that's how he will be remembered as Joe Hart, the person. As Joe Hart, the goalkeeper, he was okay. Now, I'm saying all that with a caveat, which is that, we're probably going to start looking back at the likes of Carl Stauffer even this year, and getting misty-eyed about how steady he was in relation to where we are today. So let's be careful what we wish for is how I'll finish it. But, great guy, great pro, brilliant asset around the place. And he did pretty much what he was paid to do.
Mm. Yeah, James, I think that's probably what makes Joe Hart so difficult to analyze in any sort of completely measured way. I don't think there's a perfect way of analyzing Joe Hart's career at Celtic because, I mean, from a purely football perspective, he didn't really make sense to the Ange Postecoglou system, but then he was brought in for that intangible leadership that I know that you don't believe is given, you believe that it's given too much weight in regard to what it actually means. But in that season, it did seem like a very important aspect of the building of relationship with Ange Postecoglou, the experienced head, when there's so many new players coming into the team that he was just there as a little bit of solidity at the back. And then from a goalkeeping perspective on the actual pitch, he hasn't been bad. It's just that he will never continue to progress, which is ultimately the failure of the signing of Joe Hart, the short-term nature of that. You get the good in the leadership in the first season, but then everything after that, once you have bedded in the other players, it's sort of a regressive way of thinking of bringing in players because eventually the other players are leaders and this player is no longer progressing. So you're going to need to think about replacing him after 2 to 3 years anyway. So I find myself a little bit stuck on Joe Hart. I think obviously the first season under Ange, it turned out to be a stroke of genius. It worked really well. But then from that point onwards, you're still consistently looking for a new goalkeeper. So that's sort of, we're still back at that point now.
I think Hart, and I don't want to go in two-footed this week because on Hart in particular, because of the things that Alan said, meaning that, I think he's been a good pro. He's generally been a good person at the club and someone who I think collectively, and I speak for myself, I'm not going to speak for the entire support, but my sense is obviously, but my sense is that people have been happy to root for him. He's been easy to root for kind of character at the club. But I think he's also symptomatic of why we are where we're at over the last 10 years is, and I put out, I brought it up so I can reference it here. I did a, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek, but not really tongue-in-cheek attribution, a supporter performance attribution pyramid back in August. And it basically flows downward that if Celtic win the league, the manager is a genius, recruitment has been great, and players are great, ignore the board and ignore Europe, right? That's basically been the way that perceptions kind of flow. And then the counter to that is if we lose the league, the manager's an idiot, should be sacked, recruitment's been an abomination, players are, you know, gutless, sack the board and ignore Europe. Right. So I think Hart's tenure encapsulates that player, yeah, that kind of supporter attribution. And my criticism of the club is that the level of sophistication at the club has been far closer to a supporter than a modern, you know, sporting enterprise. And so, you know, there are the measurables and there are the things that we can't measure. And by measurable, and this is an area that I've focused on because I think that, and I've said this before, that keeper play is one of the most arbitrageable in the sport with the adoption of kind of more advanced data and advanced analytics, meaning that I think it's probably the area where there's the most room for clubs that are kind of smartly deploying this stuff to get marginal gains. And so I think, you know, Hart's tenure, the measurables are such that we did not get all that much of an improvement by signing Joe Hart. His shot keeping, and again, this is not in isolation. I mean, the last time Hart was probably a keeper of a level that we probably should be recruiting was 7 to 8 years ago. And that's theoretical. Like, that would be the last time that we should have been recruiting somebody like him. So I think his persona and the narrative around him is driven mostly by other factors. And then if you just rip apart what he did on a performance basis, you know, he's basically who his prior tenure would suggest, which at Torino and Burnley, he was, you know, not a very good shot stopper. He's, the talent's point, he's kind of somewhere around average to probably slightly below average. At Celtic, that doesn't get tested that much because you only face two shots a game. And, you know, you get wild swings. So, and I think the last 2 months is a good synopsis of that, which is to his credit. And again, the advanced data and the modeling since the St. Mirren game on January 2nd show that Hart has performed very well. And I think that would align with the eye test, that aligns with the narrative right now. And this news is kind of coming out with that tail wind. But if you look at the prior month, he was objectively bad. You know, he let in a couple of free kicks from distance, Hart's, Taverniers, some other issues. So what happens is, you know, I always go back, it's confirmation bias, which is when he has a purple patch like he's had legitimately over the last 6 weeks, then, you know, he's a good keeper. And then, or he's, you know, a good shot stopper, but during periods where he hasn't had that, he kind of gets the, you know, he gets the mulligan from a perception perspective, because when he did come in, he had two seasons of that kind of positive supporter attribution. and again, the talent's point, I mean, where this all falls apart is in Europe. And, you know, this goes back to what I said years ago about, you know, the over-reliance on somebody like Brown's perception on leadership, which is, you know, that correlated with us dominating domestically when we should have been dominating. And then somehow that leadership didn't work against Molde or Maribor or Copenhagen. You know, it's like there was a somehow it was only applicable to domestically. So, you know, Barkas was not going to be the keeper at Celtic. He's made that clear since he's departed. I'm not saying that he's a quote unquote better keeper than Joe Hart, but the measurables are that we did not improve that much by signing Joe Hart, despite all the narratives, despite all of the, you know, from the full 3 seasons, his shot stopping metrics are comparable to Barkas's. I'm not saying he's not a better shot stopper. I'm saying he's in the neighborhood of Barkas. And the difference in perception, as I'm saying, is largely down to narrative and confirmation bias. Because if you look at their records in Europe, they're not that much different. You can go back and look at Barkas against, you know, Milan, which was his two, you know, big games in Europe where we let in a ton of goals and he did not play well. Well, you know, I didn't see Joe Hart saving us against Real Madrid or, you know, any of the high-end teams in Europe, or even Bodø/Glimt, for goodness sake. The other thing to me, again, the most interesting aspect of this news to me, because most of this stuff, I think, analytically has been baked into cake, meaning that, you know, the supporter narrative and confirmation bias has been what it's been, is why did it happen this week? Right. I mean, this is not something that had to be announced this week. This was an elective disclosure. And I think that's self-evident because we're about to find out late on a Friday when corporations announce news that they're not happy to release. Usually it's bad news. That's the irony of this. It's that in the prism of normal corporate life, you announce, like, you know, you had some accounting irregularities, or you're firing your CFO because of accounting regularities. That's what gets announced late on a Friday. And, you know, I suspect there's going to be a late on the Friday announcement today. And it's, you know, not going to be bad news from a PLC perspective, but probably not well received amongst the support. So I think that's probably the more interesting aspect of this, is the timing.
Why do you think they're doing that then, James?
Well, because they're going to get an absolute, you know, hammering. I suspect, given the PR wave that happened this week, I mean, it wasn't just Hart, it was Barrowfield, it was, you know, profiling CCV and Johnston today. You know, independently, any of these things by themselves, like, oh, that's, but all in. I mean, I'm not going to be surprised if, and again, just knowing a little bit about the numbers, I wouldn't be sort of shocked if it's a 9-figure cash balance on the interim reports.
Okay. I mean, so yeah, that all makes sense, right? But I suppose the question is why. Yeah. Yeah. So, well, E-Tims were speculating about.
Oh, that.
The club,
yeah.
The club being. I can't get anyone to verify that, to be fair. But then, of course, you wouldn't, would you? I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Nobody would confirm that. Barrowfield probably.
Sorry, Alan. For anybody who hasn't seen that from E-Tims, they were speculating that the club was being bulked up for sale. Is essentially
that's it. Long contracts, stellar. I'm saying stellar in the sense of, if you were an investor looking at the club as an investment opportunity, Brendan Rodgers is a big name manager. All the assets are tied down to long contracts. There's a load of cash in the bank. There's all these capital projects that have been committed to, and the money's there. It just looks like a nice plump bird ready for the pots type of thing. That's one thing. But, you know, we can speculate maybe about that, but it is speculation. But what is absolutely true is, to your point, James, one, we're not being told, and two, we're being fluffed with PR in the lead up to the announcement, which means that generally means that people have got something to hide in that sense. So that's all we do know, I think, right?
Yeah, and I'm not versed at all in UK tax law and that kind of thing, but generally speaking, in the world of corporate finance, you don't run your balance sheet the way that Celtic is to sell yourself. That's more so driven by other reasons. And I take them at their word, meaning that generally speaking, the cash buffer is there to, because they don't want to use any kind of leverage, which again, fair enough. There's, again, from a corporate finance perspective, there's some reasonable disagreement on the balance sheets not being run efficiently because of that. I mean, a little bit of debt at times can actually be more efficient from a financial perspective. And again, I don't know what the tax deductibility of interest payments are in the UK. So that may not be the same in detail. But normally, a bloated balance sheet like this attracts corporate raiders, actually. You know, this would be that would be the situation where, you know, Richard Gere's character in Pretty Woman comes in to buy the company to strip the assets and you know, it's like an overfunded pension fund or something like that, that you have this excess cash. But so I mean, I'm not saying
fruit, right?
Yeah, to me, it's more like the more likely, in my mind, impetus for why Celtic would be get sold is that Desmond just says this isn't worth the headache, you know. And I could see that scenario playing out, particularly with what's.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Going on with, you know, the politics that we referenced last week. I mean, a guy like Desmond, who's in the jet set crowd, is going to encounter people that's different than you and I do, relative to what's going on in the Middle East. And, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, Celtic are being branded in a certain way right now. And, you know, being used as a political weapon for you know, different reasons. And again, irregardless, independent of what one thinks of any of what's going on in the Middle East, that, you know, I could see that theoretically being something that would push the needle as far as a guy like Desmond saying, this is more trouble than it's worth. Mm. So I think that's probably, because from a financial perspective, you know, Celtic are kind of a rounding error for him. That's also why, you know, this idea that he does it for the money, or, I mean, it's, you know, it's just not, it's not meaningful in moving the needle for him.
Yeah. Well, so. Before we get into Motherwell, just one final point in this is that it makes no real sense, in my opinion, to sell Celtic at the minute, or it makes no sense at the minute to buy Celtic, because usually people who invest in football clubs are investing in already distressed assets that they can pump loads of money in and get in and hope for making loads of money. But that's usually in the English leagues where there's loads of money to be made. So making an investment in an already really, really bloated squad or really bloated club, financial wise, you're spending more money than you would on a regular basis because it's not a distressed asset. And then you're also investing in a league that is going to make you absolutely no money, not in the future, not in the past, not with TV revenue, and not in Europe, because the doors to Europe are closed unless you're willing to invest billions into the club, which, I mean, why would you? So unless there's something coming on the European stage, i.e. a Super League or a Super League type, and we just don't know about that yet, I don't see why any investor would buy Celtic at the minute.
Well, it's right. So again, the way these investors, because this is the world I kind of live in, they think about optionality. So what they don't, they think in probability distributions. So Celtic would actually be a cheap, as we call it, call option on some of that stuff, meaning that you are, you would be buying a fortress balance sheet and have the potential upside of something going on within Europe, you know, something with, you know, maybe a 2 or 3 tier super league with promotion relegation, that kind of thing, which people have been talking about. The other thing, I mean, you know, we've been talking about it for literally years now, is that Celtic is woefully run from a return on investment perspective relative to player trading and some of these other things. So if you were someone, you know, who had a game plan to modernize that, you could see Celtic and saying, okay, because again, this is my world. Benchmarking, we've talked about this, is when you benchmark Celtic relative to its actual peer group in player trading, it's been pretty woeful. So that is a untapped, you know, income stream that could be leveraged. And there are resources there, not only because of the cash on the balance sheet, but because there is room on the balance sheet to add some debt that wouldn't be imprudent from a financial perspective. So again, from a cold, ruthless third party, like, you know, private equity perspective, I could see those being reasonable. But again, I don't see why that by itself would be a driver for Desmond to want to, you know, catalyze a move. Again, to me, it's more so, it's just not worth the headache anymore, potentially, if he decides to get to that point. Mm-hmm. I'm saying potential headache. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm just, it's all speculating.
Yeah, I mean, they're an obvious, I think, you know, non-complex conspiracy theory type answer is, like you say, the club is run by risk-averse managers. It's run by essentially an accountant and a lawyer, right? There are no strategic thinkers there running the club. And therefore, you know, this could just be the outcome of having that mindset operating the club on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, could be. We just don't know. So what formation are Celtic going to play against Motherwell?
We just don't get told. Who cares?
I mean, do you think we're going to go 4 at the back or 3 at the back? Or
one at the back, CCV, and then 9 wingers. CCV and 9 wingers, that's what I call for.
Yeah. All right, so seriously, do we want to move on to Motherwell game? Or
yes,
will we?
Let's move to Motherwell here.
Okay, so what changes from last week? Because something does need to change.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the big question. Is what does change, if anything, both from a tactical perspective potentially, but also how that kind of interplays with selection. So I think that'll be, you know, very interesting. The evidence to date is that I suspect not anything dramatic, but, you know, we'll see. Maybe we'll be surprised. So I you know, in focusing on Motherwell, you know, they're right in line with kind of what's been giving us problems recently. So again, I think it's a good test in that sense, meaning that they're, you know, definitely performing at a better level than Ross County, who give us some issues, horrifyingly. And they're more kind of in line with where Hibs has been, which is an indictment of Hibs and a credit to Motherwell. You know, kind of similar to Aberdeen, although different. You know, they don't have the weapons at Aberdeen, particularly with the guy they lost on loan. I think he left and went into Sturm Graz, if I said that right. I'm not up on my Swiss. I think the interesting thing when I look back at them is that they haven't really man-marked McGregor, which I think, you know, that'll be interesting and could be a ray of hope for us if we kind of persist with the status quo. And but, you know, they're proficient on set pieces, but they don't get a lot of them. They actually have the least amount of set pieces in the league. And if you look at how they've scored against us in the prior two games, you know, kind of long throws and a corner. So, you know, to me, it's one of these games where right back to where we were for Kilmarnock, which is should win, should be a comfortable kind of 2-3-0 or, you know, 3-1 type of game. But, you know, the bounce of the ball gives them a couple of corners. And, if they get five corners, I kind of would expect them to score once. I mean, that would be my kind of base case, just the way things are shaking out right now. That kind of thing. So, yeah, it's kind of status quo across the board with that sliver of hope. The other sliver of hope is that Kelly has objectively been terrible this season.
Yes.
And generally he's not a very good keeper from a actual keeper play perspective. He's a pretty good long kicker to his credit. You know, he does a decent job with his distribution as a long ball playing kicking keeper. But yeah, he can be pretty woeful from a shot stopping perspective. So between McGregor and Kelly, I mean, them not man-marking McGregor if they don't do that, and Kelly being pretty woeful, I'm reasonably optimistic on a relative basis, if there is such a thing right now.
The set-piece thing is pretty interesting. Ever since that person left the comments saying I need to stop referencing English football, I keep I'm going to do it anyway. Stick to football, the Roy Keane and Gary Neville and Jimmy Carragher podcast, really interesting. But they had they were talking about the set piece situation in the Premier League right now and how Man City are the best set piece defenders and attackers in the league, and how back in the day it used to be a situation where that used to be your opportunity as a worse team or as a team at the bottom of the table to, you know, as a AFC Wimbledon or whoever it is, to capitalize on set pieces, because that's where you could get momentum, and how that's no longer a proficient tactic, because if you're not actually getting any set pieces in the first place, like Man City give away the least amount of corners to begin with, then you're not, it doesn't matter if you spend 2 days during the week practices on corners, because you're not going to get them. So there's no, that part of your game is actually going out. So Alan, what I'm saying is Celtic just need to not give away any corners to Motherwell or free kicks in dangerous positions. I don't trust them not to do that. But in more real terms against Motherwell, what I do think they need to do is take the lead early and score a second goal, because
Celtic, on for dear life.
Yeah, Celtic after 1-0 drives me insane this season. It's like I no longer trust Celtic to actually. I would trust them more at 0-0 to win the game than at 1-0.
Yeah, listen. In terms of that, then, so Motherwell are not one of the league's great pressing teams. So in the sense of being forced into errors in our own defensive third, that's less likely against this team, who, in all other respects, as James says, you know, sadly for Scottish football, in my view, kind of are very similar and play a very similar way to most of the other clubs in the league. It's all a little bit samey, unfortunately, in terms of they're going to play a variant of 3-5-2. It's going to be very long ball orientated, right? Yawn. Okay, so, but you know, listen. On the one hand, this is how you can play with stats. You could say, well, since the 9th of December, they've only lost to the Rangers and to Hearts. But on the other hand, they've only actually won 2 out of the last 22 matches in the league. And that was at home to Ross County and Livingston, who are demonstrably the worst teams in the league. So, listen, this isn't a great side. As James says, they're actually 9th in the league in terms of generating XG from set pieces. So, and that, as James says, that's probably a volume thing. They are the wrong end of XG at both ends of the pitch. They're scoring less than what the XG model says they should. They're conceding more than what they probably should. They actually are a little anomaly. The stats, it does stand out. Because, as I say, in all other respects, they're so achingly mid-table in all respects. It's quite dull, actually. But they're actually third in the league for generating what Opta call big chances. So Celtic have actually generated 100, I think Motherwell, which is the most in the league, actually. Motherwell are on 50, which is the third highest. And that could just be a statistical anomaly, to be honest with you, because the rest of the league are all pretty much within that 50-40 sort of range, really. So listen, what they are good at is they don't tend to get caught on the counter-attack a lot, which is something that Celtic have been more proficient at. The defenders tend to defend. They don't overcommit. They play quite deep as well.
That's a great point, Alan. To me, that's what stood out to me, was that they are probably the best non-Celtic or Rangers team in defending against transitions.
Yeah, and they're decent in the counter-attack as well, again, compared to the league. And we'll come to the reason for that in a second. But just to put a bit more meat on the bones in terms of what James was talking about, Liam Kelly, we mentioned last week about how Hearts are benefiting from poor opposition play rather than being brilliant themselves. Motherwell's opponents have only got 29% of shots on target, which only Hearts have a lower number. And yet, the worst in the league for on-target conversion is Motherwell. So the only second lowest in the league for getting shots on target. But once you get a shot on target against Motherwell, 40% of them go in. That's how bad Liam Kelly is. Or he's just been terrible. Maybe they've all gone in the top corner. But having watched Kelly, he's not a great shot stopper. So they've got two really good performing players that Celtic need to watch out for. And they're both in the final third. The striker, Theo Bear, he's got 10 goals off of 7.5 XG. Some of those are penalties. And that's the reason for that overperformance. But he's very much in form in terms of as a striker. And he's a big dude. He's a big dude, the type that causes our small centre backs no end of issues. And then I think to me, Blair Spittle is arguably the best midfielder in the league outside of the top two teams over the last couple of years, I would say. He's got 5 goals, 8 assists off of just over 4 XG and 6 XA. Bear and Spittle have accounted for 26 out of the 66 goals and assists that Motherwell have racked up in the league this season. So they are absolutely the threat. And they carry a decent threat on the counter. Bear's got decent pace. Spittle's very clever, good passer of the ball. So that's where the danger is. But honestly, this is a really average side. It's more about, can Celtic conquer the demons of the lack of confidence and composure that has been creeping into the play in the last few weeks. And if Johnson and Carter Vickers are fit enough to start, that will obviously bring a great deal of solidity back to the side.
So what I'm hearing is that Celtic need to return to the famous Neil Lennon tactic of SOS, shit on site.
Well,
anybody have Ryan Christie's number?
this is the problem. The more shots you take from distance, the less likely you are to get them on target. So no is the answer to my book.
I will another kind of nagging issue, and this is, it comes down to our good old friend variance, is Motherwell takes the most shots from distance in the league.
Yeah,
that's true. And it's not a small, they love to have a pop, shall we say. And I would say that's probably the aspect of Hart's current state that might be the most concerning, meaning that he's struggling. And you see that most prominently from set pieces. But, his issues with lateral movement, so if they get a – and to Alan's point, Spittle's the kind of guy who can – put one of those on goal from 18, 20, 25 yards. They're going to go long. They're going to have a lot of try to create a lot of chaos in that kind of, 18 to 30 yard box of space out in front of our keeper area. And, they will have a pop. So that's the other potential.
They don't have great width. They don't have tricky wingers or anything like that. It's going to be very direct and central.
Okay. Well, we'll see how that turns out for the partnership with Stephen Welsh and Liam Scales then. So
we'll see. This would also be another potential coffin corner with Greg Taylor. So I suspect, given Kelly's relative proficiency in kicking along, you're going to see a lot of kicks on top of Scales and Taylor's heads.
Honestly, though, after the Kilmarnock goal, I'd take Greg Taylor a million times over Burnaby in the air because, come on. A 10-year-old would have been stronger. That might be a bit harsh. Maybe there was a little bit of a shove. I don't know.
A lot of play.
Did the Yorkshire Whistler analyze that? Did he say it was a push, or was it fair enough?
I think he even mentioned the word weak. It's quite rare. He doesn't usually criticize players, never mind referees. And he was pretty scathing, I think, about Bernabe's attempts. I'm sorry, it was just a bit of a bugbear in mind. I don't want to unpick last weekend. But one of the things I forgot to opine on last week's game was that the substitutions that were made actually made complete sense at the time. You know what I mean? But they just went wrong. And actually, if you look at Bernabe's performance, other than, obviously, crucially, not defending that goal well, he didn't actually do much wrong in the time he was on the pitch. But the reason I'm mentioning all this is just, as James talked about earlier, it's fascinating how perception kind of grows arms and legs, despite actually what is largely prosaic nature of most players' performances.
Anyway. Football's a game about moments, Alan. Yeah,
I know. Yeah. That's the bit that we hold in our head, the highlights reel.
Right, that's where we shall park the podcast for this week. We'll be back again on the channel next week analysing this game, and hopefully it's analysing a win and not Celtic falling further behind in the table. But we shall wait and see. Alan, James, thanks very much, and thanks to you for listening. We'll chat to you then. Good luck.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.